telephone out your sweet little Southern Belle. If the only way to reach me is through the mailman, when I get back home, I hope my box is filled.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. John Corbett recently released his second album, Leaving Nothing Behind, on his label, Funbone Records. If you're listening to this and thinking, John Corbett, I know that name, you're probably right, though you may not know him as a country musician yet. Musician John Corbett is the same guy as actor John Corbett, who starred in the television series Northern Exposure, Sex and the City, and the United States of Tara, and in the film My Big Fat Greek Wedding. He has recently been featured on Parenthood, and it was announced earlier this month that he'll star in an NCIS spinoff on CBS. The new show is still untitled. John Corbett and his band are playing at Club Helsinki in Hudson, New York on Thursday, March 21st, and he joins us now. John Corbett, welcome to the Roundtable.
I'm ready to be at a Roundtable. I haven't been at a Roundtable. Everybody's table's square where I live.
Where do you live?
About a half hour inland from the coast of Santa Barbara, California, mm-hmm. in a sweet little town called Santa Ynez, by a sweeter little town called Solvang, which is a little old Viking town with windmills and things like that.
And do you find a lot of time and inspiration to play music there?
No, I don't.
No.
All the guys that I play music with live a couple hours south down in Hollywood, and Valencia area, the guys in my band anyway, and I'm always jumping in the car to go down there because they have families and they don't make the trek up to me, so I gotta go down there to get inspired. Even though I have a good buddy up here named Mike who will have a couple beers and play guitars from time to time, I'm always fixing a fence or taking a dog to the vet when I'm here, just when I want to sit down and play a guitar, that they find other things for me to do here besides relax and enjoy myself.
How many dogs do you have?
I have two. I have a great German Shepherd named Osco, who's about 10 years old now. He's slowing down a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then I have a 150-pound Irish Wolfhound named Scarlet.
Oh, those are great dogs. That's wonderful.
Oh, she's my girlfriend. She's amazing. I rescued her from I didn't rescue her. That's the wrong word. She's about 5 years old. A lady had her and got into some financial trouble, really, and couldn't keep her any longer and asked me if I'd take her. And I reluctantly took her and fell in love with her in about 10 minutes.
When did you begin playing music?
I think I got my first guitar. I mean, I have a picture of holding a plastic guitar when I was 4 or 5. Uh-huh. Just looking at it under a Christmas tree with a big smile and an old black and white photo that my mom took. She bought it for me. But it was a little plastic guitar with plastic strings. And I figured out how to make some sounds on it back then. But I got my first kind of real guitar when I was about 7. And it was probably a $30 model from our little 5 and dime. But it was a real guitar. It was made of wood and had metal strings on it, and there was this fellow who was a Cherokee Indian. His name was Bob Bennington, and he was a friend of the family's, and he had this amazing, I can still see it, this amazing Gibson Sunburst guitar in a hard shell case underneath his bed, and he opened it up, and it had, you know, purple velvet lining to keep the guitar nice, and it was like when they opened the Ark in Indiana Jones, you know. I remember seeing that thing come out. It was just such a presentation. And he showed me some chords, and I've been sort of strumming ever since then.
So acting came later.
Acting came way later. Acting came, I guess I was maybe 24. Mm-hmm. I moved to California at 18 after high school. I graduated in 79, and I went to work in a steel factory with my dad, who my mom and dad divorced when I was 2, and my dad, we lived in California, and when they divorced, he stayed, and we went back to West Virginia, where my mom was from, and I was born in a little town called Wheeling, and I lived there until I was 18 and knew I wasn't going to college, and my dad said, come on out, I'll get you a job, and all the steel factories in my hometown that were thriving were completely dried up and closed down, and that's what I did. I went out there and worked in a steel factory for about 6 years, and I got hurt. I hurt my back when I was about 24 in a factory, And then went back to a junior college at 24 to do something besides manual labor. And I met some actors one day in a cafeteria, and they invited me to a class. And I'd never even seen a play up until that point. And, you know, just went to the movies like everybody else and watched some TV, but I never dreamed I was going to be an actor. Even though I lived 30 miles south of Hollywood for those 6 years, I'd only made two trips to Hollywood. And one was to go with a girlfriend and look at the handprints and in the cement on Hollywood Boulevard. Mm-hmm. And we ate at a Shakey's Pizza and then took the 30-mile drive back to Long Beach where I lived. And the other time, someone, she was a hairdresser, and someone whose hair she cut gave us a couple tickets to see The Family Feud with Richard Dawson. So we that was my second trip to Hollywood in the 6 years I lived there. I never dreamed I was going to be an actor.
How do you then, from meeting some actors in a cafeteria, transition to becoming an actor? I mean, mostly full-time. It's, you know, your bread and butter.
Yeah. He's joking with these kids in this cafeteria. I had about 2 or 3 hours before my next class. And then they have to go to their class. I was 24. They were 18. But I overheard them, and I made some jokes. And they moved down to me, and we were kidding around for about 20 minutes. And then they had to go to this class, and they invited me. And I had some time, and I said, can I just come? Sure, because the classes I was taking English and some a sociology class and a social studies class. It was just like high school. You walked in and you sat down at your desk and you didn't talk to anybody in front of you. Back the class started, and then when it was over, you left and you read 5 chapters and came back the next day. I walked into this improv class, and everyone was, it was in this theater with black curtains and big black boxes for them to sit on, and everyone was coming up, giving me a hug, saying, "Hi, who's your friend? Oh, he's now handsome." And they're just, you know, endearing and sweet. And I could tell I was in a room with a lot of characters. And they let me sit in this improv class. And then the teacher, Georgia Well is her name, and she's still a good friend of mine. This was in 86 maybe. And she said, "Would you like to get up and do an improv?" And I said, why not? Because I was always kind of funny around my friends. And I got up and I did a little improv and I got a laugh. And I asked her if I could join the class. It was a junior college and they were about 2 weeks in the session. I said, can I join this class? She said, sure. And I went over and dropped all those other classes and came back and signed up for all the theater classes. Cut to 2 months later, I was starring in their college production of Hair, playing a lead of Claude Hooper Bukowski, singing and dancing, and my back wasn't hurting anymore from the steel factory accident. And my dad sitting in the front row while I'm singing, "Give me a head with hair," and he's just got this look on his face like, "What in the hell is going on here?" And about a year after that, Georgia said to me, "I think you got a real shot to make it, but the window is closing." I was about 25 years old, and she said, "You got to move to Hollywood if you want to do this," because I was really digging acting, and by that point I'd been in maybe 5 plays. And she said, you got to go move there, and you got to try to get an agent and do all those kind of things. So I did it. I moved up there, and I applied for extra work at a casting place, and next thing you know, I'm on the set of Cagney and Lacey and doing extra work in movies, and one thing just led to another, and now we're talking on the phone.
That's true. Do you prefer acting or playing music live, or are they equally esteemed in your life?
They're both great ways to express yourself. For me, they each have their own challenges. I get to be a little bit more of the boss when I'm on the road, but I'm not really. I'm a little bit of a control freak, but I also like to be. I like to be taken care of too sometimes, because when I'm on the road, I'm doing everything, doing all the driving. I'm booking these shows. I'm setting up the advancing of it. When's the load in and when's sound check, and I'm getting the hotels on Priceline. I mean, I'm doing every aspect. I'm getting the plane tickets. You know, I'm the tour manager. There's only 4 of us.
Uh-huh.
And it's nice when you work on a movie and they say, hey, we'll pick you up at your really nice hotel we put you in New Orleans. How about 7 a.m.? Does that work for you? Sure, that'll be good. Okay, we'll have a van there. And then they drive you and go, hey, we're going to drop you over here at the breakfast place. Go make anything you want. Why don't you get yourself a nice breakfast before we go rehearse this scene? How's that sound? That's great.
No, it sounds okay. You know, so
I like that part of making, of being involved in TV and film.
The new record is called Leaving Nothing Behind. How did you know it was time to record a new record?
I didn't. So much time went by from the first one. You know, I don't wear a watch. And most of the time, I don't know what day it is. I don't know if it's a Tuesday, and I don't know if it's the 19th or the 27th. I have to ask people. That's kind of how I live my life. I usually know what month it is, but next thing you know, 6 years flew by, and a friend called me up and said, hey, I hear you're coming to Nashville. This was last year. I heard you're coming to Nashville. How come you didn't call me to get some songs? And I said, where'd you hear that? I'm not coming to Nashville. So-and-so told me. Oh, no, they're wrong. And I said, if I did come, I'd want John Randall to produce my record, because he was making a record with Dierks Bentley at the time. He wrote two songs on my first record, a song called Cash and one called Bottle of Whiskey. And I'd love John to produce it, and I'd like to do all of John's songs. Yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. 2 days later, this lady told John Randall that conversation, and he called me up and said, hey, let's do it. Let's make a record. And I said, come on, man, really? I thought John was just too busy, and he was having twins at the time. He and his wife were just about ready to give birth to twins. And he had a big project coming up with this great artist, Pat Green. But he made time to do it and kind of forced me into it. Otherwise, I would have just laid back. And he said, no, I got this window. We have to do it now. And he made it happen.
And the breakdown of the songs is seven songs he wrote or co-wrote. Is that right?
I wanted 10, and he said, man, I can't do that. He goes, it's going to look, in this small Nashville community, if I make a record with you with all my songs on it, I'm going to be slightly embarrassed. But he's my favorite songwriter. And so we started out, we said, okay, we'll do three or four. And I just slowly hammered on him and worked him up to, I was trying to get him to 10, but I got him up to 7.
Okay.
And finally, you know, he liked the way I was singing his songs. I think that's how I kept knocking one more out. No, let's do one more. Oh, come on, I love this one. Let's do it. Okay, let's see how it works. And I got 7 out of it.
And then the other songs, how did you choose those?
Those were two songs I was playing on the road. I was doing a song called Rainy Windy Sunshine, and I was doing a song called Satin Sheets. I couldn't put the rest of the songs together. I was hearing demos, and I couldn't really connect anything. And so I grabbed the guitar and I said, "Hey, what about these? We play these songs." And I played them for John, and he went, "We're doing those." He liked the way I sang them, and he had good ideas what, you know, musically we could do. And then he whipped out this song called Tennessee Will by this kid, Pat McLaughlin and Adam Hood. And I just fell in love with it. I said, hey, where have you been hiding that one, man? Let's cut that. So that's one of my favorite songs on the record, this song. Have you heard the record yet?
I have heard it, and that's one of my favorites, too.
Oh, is it? Is
yeah.
It? Yeah, I love that one. It's kind of a ballad and a little hokey or corny, as they say. Because I want to make like a roadhouse record. Just, you know, a bunch of country songs. But I love that song. It just felt like what it sounds like. Just a guy cruising down the Mississippi River.
Catch a ride on a steamboat, baby. Make it home with time to kill. Mississippi River won't carry me to you, but I know Tennessee will.
I also liked that it sounded like it was going to be about someone named Will, which it isn't. It's about Tennessee doing something.
Exactly, exactly. In fact, that's the title, Tennessee Will.
Right.
Sometimes you have a little play to change a title, you know, if a songwriter agrees with you. And when I said, what's that called? He said, Tennessee Will. And I said, Tennessee Will who? Tennessee Will what? I had the same reaction.
Yeah. Do you ever write songs?
I do. They're pretty corny. They're childish. They're rhymes. They're nursery rhymes like, oh, roses are red, violets are blue. I like you. Do you like me too? You know, they're stupid rhymes when you put them up to John's songwriting. You know, he can tell a story in 3 minutes, in a 3-minute song. And he's got a beautiful way that he crafts that. And I just never got that gift, you know, and I'm smart enough to not have an ego about having my name after a song's title on my record, you know, just because I wrote it, it needs to be on there. I'll probably never make a record with my songs because there's so many songs out there that are just better than mine that other people write that I want to sing.
The album is released by your label, Fun Bone Records label.
Fun Bone
Records. When did you start the label?
In 05, when I made my first record, I had a record deal with another company that I won't name, which were a bunch of nice guys. They just wanted to rip me off. And so I said, no way, man, I'm not going to make a record and you guys are going to sell it on my name and then you're only going to give me that per record, like 80 cents a record that, you know, the record was already completed.
Right.
I just delivered it to them and with artwork and everything, and they just wanted to put it out and give me 80 cents a record, and I thought it deserved more than that. I talked to a guy, and he said, just put it out yourself, and that's what I did.
Easy as that.
Yeah. So Fun Bone Records is, they have one artist on their label and two records out now.
Are you recognized most places you go? Are you able to maintain a pretty quote-unquote normal lifestyle?
I get to live a pretty normal lifestyle, but my downfall is, you know, look, I do the typical actor thing when I go out to a city and, you know, I just made a movie in New Orleans and I don't really want to, I got like an hour to myself and I don't want to talk to people, basically.
Right.
Here's what, I read this thing once and it said, here's what fame is. It's total strangers constantly interrupting your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I like my fans. I you know, I like talking to my fans when I want to talk to them. But, you know, if I've got something heavy to think about, I don't have time. If I've only got an hour before work and I want to get a coffee, I don't really have time to just be Mickey Mouse at Disneyland and walk around and have people going, oh, my God, Aiden from Sex and the City. I'm happy that they like that guy, and I'm, most of the time I'm happy, but if, you know, like everybody, if I've got to think about some things that need my concentration, I don't have time to stand there and talk to somebody I'm never going to see again and just say, yeah, that's right, that's me, you know, answer them to, you know, what's Sarah Jessica Parker really like?
Right.
I don't mind telling them, but there's some days when I don't have time for that. So I put my hat on, I put my glasses on, but when I walk into the coffee and I'll say, could I get a latte, please? That you'll see heads turn.
Yeah.
And they'll say, oh my God, you're Aiden from Sex and the City. Because, you know, my voice is a little recognizable sometimes to people. And I will try to disguise it. I will try to disguise it sometimes and say, oh, latte, please. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that works, but most of the time I feel kind of silly doing it. And that's the way it goes. I don't mind fame, but I need a day off from it once in a while.
Sure. And surely you get recognized for things other than Sex and the City.
I got my little girl, you know, I got my music fans now, which is kind of neat.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm going through an airport and somebody will pass and go, hey, John, I like your music. And they'll keep going. It's like, that's kind of cool. I'll turn and get a big smile on my face and say, thanks for buying it.
Yeah,
and,
that's great.
You know, but I got my three groups of fans. I have my Northern Exposure fans, and I have my Big Fat Greek Wedding fans, and my Sex and the City fans.
Well, I'm personally a fan of all of those things, and United States of Terra.
Actually. I have some of those fans, too.
Right.
And I had more fans from a show I did in the early 2000s, in 03. I did a show, a short run of a show called Lucky, where I played this gambler on FX. And I still have so many people come up and say, what happened to Lucky? Now, it was the second show. I think they did The Shield, and then they did Lucky, and it was a half hour, And it was just a great show, and I have a. It's mostly male dudes in their, you know, 40s, because that show's 10 years ago now. Who always ask me whatever happened to Lucky. So I have those lucky ones too.
John Corbett, I feel like I could keep you or try to keep you on the phone forever and keep talking to you. You've been so wonderful, but I'm gonna let you go.
Oh, thanks.
And. Have a great little tour over here on the East Coast, and I hope to catch the show at Helsinki Hudson.
Okay, well, I thank you for giving me your time today. That was nice.
Well, I'm on the backside of a backslide. All my money and my whiskey is gone. I'm on the backside of a backslide.
66 now, baby. I didn't mean to do you wrong. I met the boys for one quick drink, and they kept me out all night long. I'm on the backside of a backslide. All my money and my whiskey is gone. I'm on the backside of a backslide. So honey, let me come back home.
John Corbett brings his band to Club Helsinki in Hudson, New York on Thursday, February 21st at 8 p.m. For tickets, visit HelsinkiHudson.com. To learn more about John's music, his website is johncorbettmusic.com. His new record, Leaving Nothing Behind, is available now. I'm Sarah LaDuke, and you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.